Okay. Let's move on to agenda item 19, the agricultural order program implementation status. Mr. Harris.
Item 19 is a general overview and status of all activities staff is doing right now, in the near future, and during the life of the ag order. This is not the agenda item in response to board direction to take up implementation issues at each board meeting. That item is item 20, cooperative groundwater monitoring. This item is to provide you some context for understanding implementation timing and priorities so you can work with staff and stakeholders to align discussion of various issues and with the implementation schedule built into the order. The item includes a list of ongoing activities and an attachment showing you how all activities span the five-year term of the order. It also includes a list of near-term activities and what is coming up next on page 2. Staff is not going to make a presentation about this item, but Lisa has an update on the status of establishing the technical advisory committee and will mention letters we've provided in your packet. Then we'll answer any questions you have. Lisa?
And before you start, Lisa, folks, if there's anyone that wishes to address the board on this item, would you please fill out a speaker card? I don't have any right now for this item, and I only have one card for number 20. And seeing all these faces in the audience makes me think that there are more of you that are going to want to speak, and so please fill those out and get them up to Mr. Thomas as soon as you can. Thank you very much.
So, Claire, even though you've been given 20 minutes, we still need a speaker card from you just as...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. I'm Lisa McCann. I'm a section manager and here at the Water Board, and the Ag Regulatory Program is one of the programs in my section. And I just wanted to update you on a couple items since the staff report was written. That first is the Technical Advisory Committee. We've reopened the solicitation for nominations on that for a few reasons. Number one, the contract with Center of Collaborative Policy in Sacramento that was going to work with the State Board Office of Public Participation, the contract to allow some help with facilitation and establishment of the TAC was supposed to have been in place by now, and it isn't. So we're still waiting for that. We hope it will be in place by the end of this month. Secondly, the pool of nominees was one person more than the number of slots we have to fill. So we didn't have a very good showing in numbers of nominees, 6 slots, 7 nominees, and the matchup was unclear just on cursory review whether we'd, out of that pool, we would be able to fit a person that met the qualifications or for each of the categories that the TAC specifies, that the order specifies should be on the TAC. So we just thought that there was, and we have not had proposals or people outreaching or asking us for input on any proposals for cooperative projects that the TAC is charged with reviewing and advising the executive officer about. So we thought there was low risk in creating another opportunity for people to nominate or encourage people they know to nominate themselves for categories, slots on the TAC. What are the categories?
Yes. And if you could tell us which ones didn't have anybody apply, if you know that.
I don't know that. Well, let me say it differently. There's cursory information on that, but they weren't evaluated because there were so few. And our staff wasn't going to be doing that evaluation. We were asking the Office of Public Participation at State Board and the facilitator to do the first cut on that, so it's a third-party look at that. But I will tell you... the categories. 2 researchers or academics skilled in agricultural practices and or water quality. 1 farm advisor, for example, Natural Resource Conservation Service or Resource Conservation District employee. A grower representative, an environmental representative, an environmental justice or environmental health representative, and then regional board staff, which we're not doing public nominations for regional board staff. I think 4 out of 6 were either environmental or environmental justice candidates by their experience and their own check the box. So some overlapped with some of the other categories, but all the rest is a little bit unclear of the direct fits. The grower, excuse me. There was a grower as well. That's clear. One grower slot. right? April 2nd is the new date for submitting the nominations or closing the second round of nominations.
Before you leave that area, I was listening to the qualifications or the slots. It doesn't seem quite equal. It seems to be leaning one way or the other. And that was some of the concern I had before, and it was expressed by members of the TAC that it was weighted one way or the other. Who selected the categories?
I'm sorry, I don't know what your question is.
My question is, one, who selected the categories?
They were proposed.
They were proposed
to be included in the order during the hearing, and you all voted for them.
All right. Yeah, yes. That must have been back in the Stone Ages when we started that.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You answered my question.
Okay. Go on. The other item I wanted to mention is that we gave you two letters associated with this item that has to do with the Tier 3 individual surface water discharge monitoring requirement to submit a sampling and analysis plan and a quality assurance project plan today, according to the Monitoring and Reporting Program. And we had a general letter from Abby Taylor Silva from the Grower Shipper Association to Ken requesting that the executive officer extend the date for all the growers to submit those plans. And we developed a reply that Ken sent a letter back saying we're not changing the date or the MRP, the monitoring and reporting program's requirement to submit by today, but that growers should make their best effort to get those plans in as soon as they can, and that if they're making a good faith effort and they get them in sooner rather than later, that staff can agree not to consider that violation for enforcement.
And this letter, I did review it in advance and talked to Ken about it and was in agreement that it should go out the way Ken had proposed.
So again, those were comments on a couple of the shorter-term activities that we bulleted out for you on page 2 of the staff report on the general program status.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lisa. I just realized that I meant to comment that the letter from Ken in my copy
is missing page 2 and 4.
Yes. So
same with me.
Yeah, so is it possible we can have that generated so I could fill in the picture?
Absolutely.
I'm just going to say I think this whole agenda was jinxed from the beginning, it seems like.
We'll let it go at that.
Yeah.
It's a jinx.
Yeah, Lisa, can at break or something, can we get correct copies?
Yeah,
of the board?
Actually. It's the letter that we sent, our letter.
Correct.
The letter is dated March 4th, and it seems to be a 5-page letter.
In progress.
Thank you.
Sorry for whatever contribution I may have had to that.
Okay.
So what I was saying is just that those are the Technical Advisory Committee and the Tier 3 monitoring and reporting requirements are two of the what we're calling near-term or short-term activities that we bulleted out for you on page 2 of the staff report in context of the broader overall program update or program activities program for the next 5 years. And if you have any questions, either Angela and I will be happy to answer them.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. And my question is, the description in the letter we received requesting the extension, this is dated February 15, it refers to a 53-page technical document as a guide, and then in the letter from Mr. Harris in response, to Abby Taylor Silva. I know I don't have all the letter, but there is a part of it kind of describes what that 53-page document is. Can you characterize for us what that document includes, and could you also give me your best sense of, you know, what of the 53 pages are actually the working instructions that, you know, someone would have to go through? I'm guessing that 53 pages includes a lot of ancillary information.
I'm going to ask Karen Wooster if she's here. There she is. As you know, Karen is our...
Okay.
Oh, you went to make... Oh.
Well, I had it.
Oh, I have to.
Okay.
You can ask your question again with Karen present, but I just want to finish my introduction. Karen, as you know, is our monitoring coordinator. She also is the quality assurance officer for our region for all and any sampling and analysis plans and quality assurance project plans that are submitted for other monitoring projects. And
okay.
she authored the document and will be reviewing the plans okay. and helping make the recommendations for approvals for those to the executive officer.
And obviously has very good timing. So my question is, in the letter that we received from Abby Taylor Silva, she notes that, and it's dated February 15th, she notes that they received a 53-page document with instructions that was released on the 7th of February, so roughly a week before her letter. And I don't have the full letter from Mr. Harris in response, but... I gather that 53 pages was an attempt to provide a great deal of information. I was curious how much of the 53 pages was actually the instructions for completing this, information that they need to provide.
Well, it's two separate documents, so that includes title pages, tables of contents, signature pages. You know, it's a very, there are two documents, the sampling plan and the mm-hmm. QAPP.
Right.
The QAPP is actually a required format by EPA, so all of the sections are actually mandatory in order to define it as a QAPP. Mm-hmm. So although it is lengthy, those individual sections were made as absolutely simple as possible. Some of them are a paragraph long, and in front of each of the sections, there's often a paragraph or more of explanatory information that can be deleted. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's maybe a quarter of the document. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a bit of information content, and most of it's just language they leave in there, and they fill in blanks. Mm-hmm. So although a lot of the content is instructions, much of it is the content of the document that they don't need to change. It basically describes the methods and protocols and mm-hmm. and so forth that are used to do the types of methods that they need to do. So they don't need to change that. They only need to fill in blanks. They need to write a few descriptive paragraphs about their sampling locations, the layout of their properties. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to pretty much provide, it's complex information. We're talking about analytical methods and so forth, but that's what we're asking them to do. So if we're going to call it a QAPP, we needed to have that content. So we tried to pretty much provide it to the extent possible. Now, they can modify that. Mm-hmm. In fact, they can start from scratch, mm-hmm. and they could from the beginning start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So that's why it is lengthy, but I think the amount of work involved in completing it is as minimal as it can be.
So in this document, you provided suggested language mm-hmm. that would meet the criteria and that they have the option to review and then modify as they think would be more appropriate to their approach to what they believe they're going to be doing.
That's correct.
So you've given them essentially a good understanding of what's expected.
Right.
Okay.
We've given them probably, 90% of the required content.
Uh-huh. Okay. I expected that was part of what that 53 pages included, was just a good deal of background information, mm-hmm. or at least helpful information to what needed to appear in the QAP. And I have worked on a QAP, so I know how difficult it seems. But with that kind of assistance, that could eliminate a lot of the kind of mystery of.
That was the hope. We'd make it as simple as possible.
Yeah. Okay. No. Thank you.
I think I read in one of the letters that they were estimating it could take up to 50 hours to complete this.
That would surprise me, but, you know.
I just want to add something to that. The way we look at that is if they've already done the analysis, decision-making around with understanding the criteria around where their sample sites need to be and what labs they're going to use and know the methods and some of the other technical details, then certainly filling it out wouldn't take that long. So it's a little bit hard to understand when people are talking about how much time. You know, certainly if they've done no analysis of how what they need to do for their own unique site characteristics to design a monitoring plan, then it will take potentially more than that. So in those conversations, it hasn't, you know, with individual growers and generally speaking, it hasn't always been clear whether we're just talking about having all that, know what the questions are and have already answered them, and then creating the actual plans versus documents versus still needing to answer some of those questions.
Chair.
Dr. Hunter?
Is there any link between this phase of work and the farm plan, on-site farm plan? Would any of the work that's been done to create that on-site farm plan be informative to the CAP, completing the CAP?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Describing your discharge characteristics is a on the enrollment, correct?
This is Angela Schroeder. Yes, so basic characteristics about your farm, a farm map, for example, are those aspects that are required as part of the farm plan and enrollment. And for Tier 2 and Tier 3 growers, were also included in the annual compliance form. So if you had been through that exercise of producing that information, it would feed in directly to the sampling analysis plan.
But just to add to that, to be reasonable, if you have a very large, if you're Tier 3 and you have a very large farm and you have measurable volume of runoff from multiple locations, it does take some analysis and some decision making to determine where you're going to sample so that you're getting a representative volume. So we've asked for them to tell us where sampling sites that would represent 80% of the runoff. The volume of runoff, but that's not an obvious a number of sites or locations, even if you know your basic general discharge characteristics.
Okay. Any other board questions? I don't know if you're done, Lisa. Mr. Jordan.
Just a comment or a suggestion. As we get these updates, they're going to smile at me and curse me later. But I'm concerned about the problem of cumulative noncompliance. You know, if you go back to how many people didn't do their ENOI, and by the time you stack those up on significant compliance dates or items, and maybe it comes back and we look at it in a year or two, and it's, now it's a stack of misdemeanors. But we're talking about limited staff resources and fairness to the people who did comply. Would there be an easy method for you guys just to have as part of this report or this update just a list of what you consider are key compliance issues and dates and the stat on what's there? Like 67% did their ENOI and 33% didn't, and what the well monitoring was, and we have some groundwater monitoring dates coming up, and whatever you would consider going forward, and you just accumulate those, and those would be part of the report, so you kind of get a feeling on what the issues are out there and still on non-compliance. Is that something that's relatively easy to do?
I think we can figure out how to do that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks. And then I'd just like to pass along my appreciation to the executive officer. I think the reply to that letter was an elegant compromise that both protected the process and offered a way for those groups to continue to move forward and comply with that requirement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
It's open for you to continue asking us any questions.
Mr. Johnston? Nothing? Okay. Anything more, Lisa, from staff at this time?
Not on this item, though.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I have five speaker cards. Why don't we get to those, and then we can continue to move forward with this. Kirk Schmidt, Ben Pitterly, Gail Delahunt, Darlene Dinn, and Abby Taylor Silva. If anyone else wishes to address the board on this item, please get a card in at this time.
Mr. Harris, is this an appropriate time to talk about bioassessment?
We're trying to figure out whether or not it's how it's related to the item as opposed to general.
It appears to me you have two items on the agenda today. Right. One is cooperative groundwater monitoring, and the other item is everything else that deals with the ag waiver.
Yeah, yeah.
And I may have read it wrong, but that's my interpretation.
I think that that's fine if you want to.
I mean, it's at your discretion.
This is a generalized status on implementation of the ag order. And so you've got 3 minutes. And
no, it won't take 3 minutes. It'll take longer because we've been dealing with this issue specifically for 4 years. And we need a resolution before May of this year.
So okay. let me give the board an update. We have been talking about this with Preservation, Inc. We owe Preservation, Inc. a response. We have a response drafted. I shared that response last week with the chair and the vice chair, and they gave me comments. This week we have not been able, with preparation for the board meeting, had to set that aside. So we do have that. I was going to call you before I sent you the letter. And so I'm hoping that, and I'm going to look to Lisa, I think there were a couple of sections that we had to add. So I'm going to look to Lisa, and I think when I talked to Lisa this week or last week, I thought we could do that early next week. Was that correct, Lisa?
Yes, that's my understanding as well.
Okay, so you and I will be talking next week, and you'll have the letter next week regarding this issue. So I don't know if you want to continue your presentation at this point, but
I think it's fundamental that we continue the presentation. It will take more than 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I think you should tell us what you want to tell us.
If you could.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a clicker. The MRP that we've been using going back to 2005 requires for an annual bioassessment, which is conducted, which initially was conducted at all 49 sites we monitored. Starting 4 years ago, it was brought to our attention by some of the growers that we were trespassing on their land. We sought an opinion from our council, who advised us without consent we could not conduct the bioassessment. Now, a bioassessment is a series of 11 transects and then alternate transects extending 150 meters upstream from our monitoring site. This is a site on the Salinas River. It's not 150 feet, 150 meters above our monitoring site, almost 500 feet. Here, this is public access because it's a navigable waterway. And we've continued to monitor this site as required by the MRP whenever we had to do bioassessment. When the new ag waiver was adopted, the requirement for bioassessment was reduced from annually to once every 5 years. We originally were going to do this in the third year, the second and third year of the monitoring. And as I explained to your board last month, we have made a small change in the process of doing monitoring this year to combine both the aquatic and the sediment constituent analysis for the Southern Management Unit for 2013 and then for the Northern Management Unit in 2014, because the data that is produced will be much more meaningful if you do the aquatic and sediment studies at the same time and also at the same time as you're doing toxicity studies. As a result, the bioassessment for the Southern Management Unit, which is Southern San Luis Obispo counties and Santa Barbara counties, is to be done this year in May. In 2011, we received correspondence in October from Roger Briggs stating that this Region 3 staff would acquire access for us to do monitoring for the bioassessment. In 2012, I started sending reminder letters to staff saying we need to deal with bioassessment, and we are scheduling it for May of 2013. We still don't have access. Some of this correspondence was email, some was more formal. I received a letter, and I raised this issue at your board meeting, at your last board meeting. I received a letter in response in the beginning of February from Mr. Harris, which raised several issues that were of concern to Preservation, Inc. The first being that it stated that Preservation, Inc. had the obligation to obtain access from the private property owners. And this was inconsistent with Mr. Briggs's earlier statement that was made an order by his adoption of it. It also stated that we were representing the growers. And I think this is an important issue to bring up at this part of your meeting today, because it also comes up under item 20, in that Preservation, Inc. is not a coalition in the sense of the Central Valley Regional Board, where the coalitions actually do represent the growers that participate in each of those geographic or commodity coalitions. Preservation, Inc. is paid by growers a fee to participate in the cooperative monitoring program, and by doing that, they are then in compliance with their obligation to do surface water monitoring as part of the ag order. But we do not represent them in any way. We do research and do education and outreach. And as a result, we don't have the ability to dictate to growers, nor have we ever, that they have an obligation to do something beyond the payment of a fee to us. However, this issue needs to be resolved, because the bioassessment is actually a very useful tool. Now, we have, you know, sometimes I think I always pick the wrong color dots. The yellow dots here represent sites that have access issues because of private property. The green sites are on the Santa Maria and San Ynez rivers, where we have access and upstream access to do the bioassessment. And one of them is Vandenberg, where we also get our personal armed guard to do the bioassessment. But the rest of the sites are private. Now, these include this one on Oso Flaco. It's a ag piece of property. It's one owner, both sides of the stream. This is pretty easy. This is actually the minority of the sites that we monitor. And I'm only going to talk about the Southern Management Unit, because that's the only one we have to resolve access to by May. This is another site. This is Profumo Creek. There are no ag uses upstream from our site. And indeed, these are all light industrial commercial uses. We also have, you know, horse ranchettes upstream. We have restaurants, golf courses. There's a wide variety of things upstream. We did analysis of each of the sites in the Southern Management Unit to determine whether or not there was ag land upstream or that there was another use. And this is the result of our analysis. Well, it turns out that only about a third of the sites are ag. So of the what we estimate to be 45 parcels upstream from our sites, 10 are clearly agriculture, 10 are clearly not, and the remainder are mixed or uncertain. The reason this is an issue is because while it may be possible for you to look at a grower who's enrolled in the ag order and say in the scope of the authority you have to increase monitoring, as part of the Port of Cologne, that they should be able to provide access to us. And that may be within your authority to do. It is not within the authority of Preservation, Inc. to do, because we have no authority. We are not a government agency. But I don't really know how you're going to achieve access for a 500-foot stretch going up into industrial or residential property, because the owners of those properties and the tenants of those properties may not be subject to the jurisdiction of the Water Board. I wanted to bring this to your attention today because we first brought this to your attention 4 years ago, and we tried an alternative method of using tiles to put in the stream bed to see if it was a proxy for doing an upstream bioassessment. And while it was an interesting scientific study, it really doesn't result in a proxy for the upstream whatsoever. All you manage to do is find bugs that like to live on tiles, which are not necessarily the same as the bugs that live in the gravel and sand upstream. We haven't had to do this for the last 2 years because of the timing of the MRP and the new order. There was no requirement to do bioassessment. So now we're to the point where we would like to have a resolution. This position of Preservation Inc. has said on our letter of February 14th that we thought this was resolved and that access would be obtained by staff. Obviously, I have not seen Mr. Harris's response, and I have to give him credit in that I left on vacation on the 15th of February, and he got back to me on the 15th, so we did discuss this. I also have to apologize. My vacation did something to my hearing, so that if I appear to be ignoring you, it's because I actually can't hear very well today, but that's a different issue. But so we have been pursuing this. We just have a deadline that if we're going to do the bioassessment at any more than 5 sites in the Southern Management Unit in May, which is when we expect to do this, access has to be obtained before then.
Are these sites all on navigable waters?
No. The only ones on navigable waters were the green sites. Mm.
Okay. Well, to staff.
So the only the green sites there on the Santa Maria and Santa Ynez are on navigable waters.
And this is just the southern unit.
Right. And then the northern unit. So there were 11 sites total out of the original 49 sites that we were able to either have access to because they were on navigable waterways, or in the case of a couple concrete ditches, they were owned by a city or a drainage district.
Okay. Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Chair Young. I'm just curious. You characterize your position in terms of the relationship you have to the fee payers. They are required to pay you a fee for their participation in the cooperative monitoring.
To participate in the cooperative monitoring, but they're not required to participate in the cooperative monitoring.
Correct. But those that pay you a fee, do you have an agreement with them, and what is that agreement?
There is no agreement whatsoever. The way this was structured in 2005 was that a grower would indicate on the notice of intent that they were going to participate in the cooperative monitoring program. The proof of participating in the cooperative monitoring program was that Preservation Inc. received the check. There is nothing more than that. So each year, we get the database and we send out bills and we receive payments. And I can also address ongoing issues with the database if you would like this morning, but that's a separate topic. But right. Beyond that, we have no representative relationship with the growers.
I understand that. I'm just wondering, in the order itself, in the monitoring language, those that opt to submit a fee, is there a description of what that fee covers and what then is entailed, what relationship is created between Preservation Inc. and a fee payer? There must be some description of what that means.
In the current MRP, there is an option given in each of the 3 tiers it talks about surface water monitoring. Mm-hmm. And elsewhere in the order, it gives the grower the option of either doing their own surface water monitoring individually or participating in the cooperative monitoring program. And there is no other description of any relationship that establishes beyond that.
Does it opt into the cooperative monitoring program? Does that oblige them to participate in some fashion through their third-party technical assistance?
The order is silent on any fees individual growers would pay to Preservation Inc. for monitoring. The order is not silent on the grower's responsibility mm-hmm. to conduct the surface receiving water quality monitoring requirements. The order also is explicit about a permit fee, enrollment fee.
But then it doesn't specify once a grower submits a fee, the implication is that monitoring will occur and that they have to then participate in that program fully. There's nothing that suggests that by submitting that, I mean, to me it sounds like what we're saying is if you just pay the money, you don't have to have any monitoring going on. It's not required. You just pay the fee.
That's exactly what it says.
Well, I'm asking for that to be clarified.
I'm not sure if your question is answerable, but the order requires them to do the monitoring if they opt into cooperative. Whether there's a fee structure that we that the water board knows about, understands, manages, or the water board is responsible for tracking fees for enrollment. Growers are paying essentially two fees, combined fee, whatever you want to call it, if they're in the cooperative monitoring. But we're not specifying that, managing that.
So
Jessica, help me out if I'm not
Monica,
accurately.
Why don't we do this? Because I think their issue is related to access for the assessment.
Right.
So why don't we have staff respond to what we have just heard and to fill us in on what they think is going to be the resolution for what Mr. Schmidt has presented as a problem. So let's shift to that and have either Ken and or Jessica and or Lisa respond to this issue of not being able to get access. Who are we going to do that? Go ahead.
Okay. So I want to say what I understand the context of the moment that we're in right now is, which is internally internal staff deliberations over the most appropriate response and paths to resolution.
Sure.
So I'm a little bit uncomfortable publicly discussing what the final resolution might be.
Okay. Well,
however, we can speak to the issues.
I'm happy to work with staff later than today to work through this. It's not a question that I think needs to be resolved by the board.
Okay.
This is an issue that was raised in between the last board meeting and this board meeting, and because we're scheduling this for May, some diligence has to be paid to this since nothing has happened since October of 2011.
So let me repeat that this will at least Preservation Inc. will know the what the board is thinking next week. We'll have the letter to them, and the letter has gone through legal, so we know that all of those pieces have been tied up. I can give you an example. In when I was working in Los Angeles, this is a common problem, especially in the Superfund sites like San Fernando, San Gabriel Valleys, where you have large plumes of VOCs spreading all over the place, and EPA and the water boards are trying to get a handle and put, characterize the basins, put cleanup systems in. And many times a landowner who has not contributed to the problem, their property is in a position that's absolutely critical to correct characterization of the problem, and contractors need access to put a well in, and they refuse. It's very straightforward. The regional board just writes them a letter and says and explains why we need access and informs them that if they don't grant access, then the regional board will deem them to be a discharger. And usually that's sufficient to gain access to the property. If Jessica wants to weigh in, she can. But we have, my understanding is we have all the legal authority we need to gain access to any of these sites if we need to. The question is, what's the role of Preservation Inc. and what's our role? And I think the discussion is very relevant to the whole groundwater co-op discussion that's going to go on today, in that the structure, the relationship of these third parties to growers, and how that is represented to us and how it is represented to the growers is absolutely critical. I believe that it is something that we are going to need to work with everyone on, and I think that in the next iteration of either this waiver or a WDR or whatever form it takes, that this needs to be addressed specifically.
I just want to clarify one piece of what Ken said. The issue is that I don't think there's any disagreement about who has the authority to do that. Preservation Inc. clearly does not, and we clearly do. It's about resources and responsibility for the steps leading up to the application of that authority. And we also don't have any disagreement about the history of discussions about it, this, that staff was much more optimistic that staff could participate with resources more actively in taking full responsibility for all the steps to note, to identify who the landowners are, contact landowners, and now we're rethinking that, and the expectation for Preservation Inc. on behalf of the individual growers who are responsible for getting this monitoring done to work with us to carry some of that responsibility.
But would you agree, Lisa, that Preservation Inc. does not have the authority to enter onto certain lands?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Neither do these other consultants or individual landowners in the kind of case that, that Ken was talking about.
Okay. So there's a legitimate conundrum here on how to complete the assessment work.
Well, I think the letter that we will be sending next week will be very clear about what we think the solution is, and so I'll leave it at that at this point.
If I can just conclude, because we end up with having discussions about your database almost on a quarterly basis with you going back to 2005, but in response to the representation issue, the letter from Mr. Harris on February 13th had a paragraph that growers who are participating in the cooperative monitoring program found to be somewhat high-handed, in that it said that if Preservation Inc. is unable to resolve these issues through the means above or another alternative, that results in a failure to collect the bioassessment monitoring information per the MRP, we will consider all those who elected to cooperatively monitor out of compliance with the MRP. And I think this would be a tremendous disservice to over 1,600 growers who have consistently been part of the cooperative monitoring program and have enrolled with the program through the ag waiver and now the ag order, who have nothing to do with any of these 59 sites in total or the 27 sites in the Southern Management Unit. And it, I think, is a reflective of a lack of appreciation of how hard many growers have worked to be in compliance, to say that no one will be in compliance merely because we are unable to do a bioassessment. And this was an effort that we have brought to the attention of this board for many years, and it's not for our lack of diligence that we're not doing this. But that brings me to the question of lack of diligence. Last time, before your board, we had a very long discussion about your database. And the real person who has to grant access to us is not the landowner. Because if the landowner rents the property to a tenant, they also give to the tenant the quiet enjoyment of that piece of property. So only the tenant can give us access. While we can go to the assessor parcel maps to find out who the owner is, only your database will show who the tenant is. And as we discussed last time, finding this information in your database is very problematic. It also is one of the reasons why I think that it's important the staff help work on identifying who the tenants are for the properties, at least the properties we've already identified here, so that there is some base to start with going forward to say these are the tenants that need to be dealt with, as opposed to merely saying, well, if you start with the landowner, there is no possible way we're going to go from the landowner to the tenant to consent, or you're going to go from landowner to tenant to consent, and allow us to get this process, you know, going in May of this year. We did get an update on the database in February. It was a little bit late. It is not helpful. It doesn't identify the new enrollees. Of the enrollees in the December database that were shown as pending, all of them are still shown as pending except for one. And the number of pending acres went from 1,000 acres to 2,000 acres. We've repeatedly asked for clarification to identify the purported 28 new enrollees from December until February, and we have not received a response from staff to help us look through this. And the reason we find this difficult is that new enrollees are not given a consecutive number. They are somehow shuffled into the database, making it impossible for us to determine who the new enrollees are, because the billing information we use is what has been called the AW number. And the highest AW number in the database in December is still the highest AW number in the database today, even though there's potentially 28 new growers that we should send bills out to. So this is not an end to the discussion on a database, but it is an issue that we feel is timely given the fact that the database needs to be used on the access issue.
So if I could, I think his comments bring back the issue that we are facing, and that is a lack of staff resources to do all the work. What staff has been doing the last month or so has been working with Grower Shipper and Western Growers and others, on the besides their normal routine kind of activities they have to do, working on helping to comment on the cooperatives proposals that you're going to hear about later. We are internally in the process of shifting staff from lower priorities to the ag program. That has not finished yet, but we're still working on that. As far as modifications to the database, I mentioned last time, I believe, that the State Board has approved funding for making some modifications to GeoTracker that will assist with some of these issues. And we can prioritize some more changes to the system, but we can't even ask now for the funding for it until next. We won't have an additional pot till next July. It's just the way state government works. It's the way state government budgets. And given the lack of resources, our hands are tied in how fast we can make changes to the data system. I wish we could hire a consultant and spend $1 million to fix this to everybody's liking, but that's just not something we can do.
Mr. Johnston, did you have a question?
I did, but I wanted to tell you the truth. I forgot what it was.
Okay.
Excuse me. Can I just want to correct something I said previously about fees. The order does require dischargers to pay a monitoring fee to comply with the monitoring and reporting requirements. There is a condition that obligates growers to pay for that.
But that fee is the state fee, 56 cents an acre, or 57 cents.
I was talking about there's two parts of a fee. They pay it in one check. They might think it's one fee, but there's the fee for enrollment and to be enrolled in the permit, and then there's a monitoring, a fee to participate in the cooperative monitoring.
Okay. Mr. Johnston, did you remember your question?
I did.
Yeah, good.
And I thought of another one. My first question was, Mr. Harris, you said that you do believe that we have the authority to get the access, although clearly it's not so simple in terms of figuring out, as Mr. Schmidt stated, exactly who we have to exercise that authority on. Do we have the authority to get the access on other than agricultural landowners?
Yes.
Okay. My second question is in reference to what Mr. Schmidt was saying about his inability to identify new enrollees. Does the database contain a date of enrollment?
It does, Angela Schroeder. I think part of the issue is the knowledge of how to actually query that data. So, and part of it is in making sure that staff assist preservation to identify those types of fields. So there is an enrollment date, and there are queries you can run to look at enrollees or acreage that wasn't represented in the previous data set. It's not, our staff does it very routinely. So part of it is just being able to run the queries and also to identify those types of fields for information that are necessary to identify what you want.
So it seems like it's just a question of communicating to Preservation, Inc., what those queries look like to be able to identify new enrollees, even though they're not sequentially numbered.
That's correct. From my perspective, this issue was just brought to my attention this week. I'm not sure how early it was brought to staff. I don't believe it's been too long, but this is something that, in the midst of preparing for this board meeting, that we've been looking at. But in general, we identify new enrollees all the time, and that's how we inform them of the requirements.
So that's at least one we can solve then.
If we are provided with that field, we do not get all the fields. So we don't have a field that says date of enrollment. We have multiple fields that are unused.
There are still ways to query the data to identify those enrollees that were not present in the previous data set, even without that field. However, we're looking at the data that's provided to Preservation Inc., and we can add whatever fields that would assist them in more easily identifying the new enrollees. But I don't think it's a problem with a database necessarily. I think that the data is there. We are able to query out the new enrollees, and we can certainly assist Preservation Inc. to facilitate that.
And the reason that they're not provided with the date of enrollment field?
Well, we've been working over time to give them data, and so we cannot give them all the data from the ENOI. We have never given them the date of enrollment. It hasn't been...
No, we used to have that. When we maintained the database, we had the data of enrollment.
Right, but in the past 3 years of transferring data back and forth, we haven't.
It seems like it would be a useful function for them to have access to and would not compromise anyone's privacy.
Right, we've identified that as something we could do.
Thank you.
Okay. Unless there's any other questions for Mr. Schmidt, why don't we move on to our next speaker?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ben Pitterly.
Good morning. I'm Ben Pitterly. I'm the Watershed Programs Director with Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. And I just wanted to speak briefly in regard to the Technical Advisory Committee, the TAC. We learned that that staff recently extended the period for nominating, applying for membership to serve on the committee. And I guess I just did want to point out, since it came up today, that the TAC was, I'm not sure it really matters much at this point, but the TAC was, for the record, I believe originally a concept proposed in the ag alternative proposal. It was originally ag's idea, and the idea was that it was something that would provide assurance that as alternative monitoring proposals were submitted, it was to provide assurance that the broader community could review those proposals and that the monitoring programs would comply with the waiver requirements. But this was originally something that ag proposed. It was something that we thought at the time was a good idea. It was something that the board thought was a good idea, and that's why it was adopted into the current order. We learned that recently at one of the last board meetings or hearings that apparently the Monterey County Farm Bureau is actively discouraging its members from participating in the TAC, which would seem to be obstructing the process. Even though ag may no longer be interested in participating in the committee, other stakeholders are, we are, and I guess we're concerned that there doesn't appear at this point to be necessarily a plan to provide that opportunity if the TAC doesn't actually form, right? And so, and we'd like to ask that the region does provide that opportunity, whether or not it's just convening a TAC that doesn't have its full membership, if not all the seats are interested in participating, or whether it's developing some alternative process, that opportunity to provide review of those monitoring proposals is important to us, and we'd ask that the region make sure that that opportunity is provided.
Great. Thank you for your comments. Gail Delahunt. Then Darlene Din.
I'm back. Gail Delahunt with Western Growers. I wanted to speak to the Cooperative Groundwater Monitoring Program and the effort that we're working with your with Ken on.
Do you want to hold that for agenda item 20?
As far as allowing folks to opt in, do you want me to do that then?
I think that would be best, because that's when we're going to take this up. So I'll move your card into the stack of 20. Ms. Din? Followed by Abby Taylor Silva.
Hi. Good morning. I'd like to offer a real quick historical context for new board members and those that don't. I'm going to show my age. I started participating in water quality issues in Santa Cruz County in the late 70s, and working through the volunteer process in different aspects. And I would consider myself one that spent a lot of time in collaboration. And I wanted to correct a couple things that do concern me on this. It takes a while to work through and to make fundamental changes in some of these complex systems. It also takes time to really understand and characterize data and to have a real clear understanding of regulatory change. And it also looks at the skill set by which and over the years that we've evolved and tried to work in collaboration and in this aspect. And I do want to speak to a couple things. One is the ag alternative and the TAC that had been developed through that was about looking at the ag model and the coalition model that was being moved forward. And it wasn't to be really set aside. It was to really be put in through a system. And the matter of the items as it relates to the TAC are well documented in the state. So for that, I think that's a sidebar. But I do want to say that I felt that was characterized differently. The second real important thing I want to say is there's some unintended consequence that are going out. I was contacted with a grower whose insurance agent has asked them to vacate any farm worker housing on their property and to demolish it and to remove any, either that or to go into a public system for insurance liability. I think it's important that we find more information out of that, and I don't know all the parameters. But what I came forward here to say is these are complex problems. They're having other ripple effects that relates to other entities that didn't participate in this process. And the growers are trying to look at their new systems approach. They're looking at systems approach on how they're dealing with their with groundwater, with water quality, with the NOIs, with the regulatory framework, with getting up to date, to finding the technical assistance, to learning about the trade associations, to understanding what is going on in the state, to trying to re-engage with staff. This is a lot more complex. My phone rings off the hook on mostly who does what, who can I call, is this under the regional board, is this under the state board, is this under XV2X, is this... You know, is this, should I call Cooperative Extension? Should I call RCD? Should I call NRCS? Do I need to call a fertilizer company? Should I call that? I just want to close. These are very complex systems, and I just really ask that you take it in a different and to continue to work with staff and to realize that we have to be real careful not to do revisionist history. And I just thank you for... just a moment in time to try to move the ship.
Thank you for your comments. Abby Taylor Silva, then Steve Shemek, and then Norm Groot.
Hi, Abby Taylor Silva with the Grower Shipper Association of Central California, representing about 350 grower shipper processors and affiliated organizations. And I need an iPad, so forgive my big old computer up here. But I wanted to speak to you about the discussion that was held on the QAP request. Thank you very much, Ken, because he did respond very quickly to that request with Lisa, and we did appreciate that very much. I wanted to give a little background on kind of the timing for that request. We had been told that we should expect a QAP template probably in mid-January, and I wanted to also make you aware, our members have really been asking us, what about a QAP template? Is it being worked on? From what I can remember, last summer. So they've really been thinking about it. I don't want you to think that everybody was just waiting around and not doing anything. We received that in early February. And while we understand that that template was not required to be filled out exactly as it's presented, it's obvious to us that that's something, that level of detail is what is expected by staff for a QAP. And so that is something that was valuable to growers to see, but with 5 weeks to go, they don't have a whole lot of time. Ken, in his response, asked for individual requests, which we understand. But in the last couple of weeks, we have members who've made individual requests, and they're told there's just not enough time to grant an extension, which I understand, and I understand the limitations of not having enough staff members. That said, I did just hear Board Member Jordan express concern that the board is creating a situation of cumulative noncompliance. And that concerns me, and it concerns my members, because that's not the intent by any means. I have members who have hired staff, invested thousands of dollars already. They have major questions left unanswered. And these are questions that I have sent to regional board staff. And again, I understand that, you know, I sent probably a week ago, and I understand that there's a lot on their plates right now. But I don't want you to think that we're not doing anything. And I want to give you an example of what these questions are, because some of them create a situation where the growers are at a standstill with the labs they have to work with in order to complete these QAPs. Specifically, it's very unclear what a discharge point is. There are conflicting definitions per the order, the MRP, the SAP, the QAP, and verbal definitions that we've been told. This is part of what I have expressed in an email. We're trying to get that clarified. But it definitely affects my members' ability to get their QAP done. Additionally, on the water quality data sheet, the growers to identify their most recent pesticide application. We don't know if this is limited to chlorpyrifos and diazinon. If it's not, or does it mean the most recent pesticide application for the entire ranch? Because that could be multiple applications that happen in one day. So which of that day? You could also have 6 to 8 active ingredients in a pesticide application. It's just very confusing. We're not exactly sure what's needed. These are questions we have. It's all in good faith. And that's what I want you to know. So it creates heartburn for my members when they now feel like, okay, and thank you to Ken's letter, and I know that I'll wrap up, but I know that you're looking to extend kind of your timeline to enforce, but they don't want to be out of compliance. And so we're just kind of in a challenged period right now, and I understand the staff challenges, but I don't want you to think that the growers aren't trying, because they really are.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Don't go yet. Mr.
So just one clarification is that the ones that came in last week and this week, we've had some that just came in, it's not that we're not going to grant extensions. We just can't look at them right now because we're sitting here and we're preparing to sit here. So I think our response was we will, to those individuals, is that we explained that, told them we were getting ready for a board meeting, that we would start looking at them next week and we would let them know.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. I just think that today, you know, they feel, am I out of compliance? And they don't want to be. And we're just in this position.
Right. And I think the board should know that we are working with all the growers. We're not out giving people tickets. And, I mean, we just, you know, we're what one person said earlier, this is unlike the Boeing 787, which was flight tested and everything, and it still ended up with problems. You know, we're basically flight testing this order right now as we implement it, and you could not have anticipated or thought of every detail when this was adopted. And so as we go along, we are making adjustments and working with the growers and the other parties. And this is a long-term process. We are not going to solve these problems this year or next. This is a long-term permanent program, which is in its infancy. If you look at our other programs, MPDS, I mean, even stormwater has been around 24 years, and they're still working on that. So I hope everyone keeps that in mind. And
can I just clarify one thing more
specifically?
There's been no extension of any requirement, submittal date granted. So I think that's important to be clear, that if people heard from us or haven't heard from us, the regulatory context is the same. Their due date for submittal, according to the requirements, is today for everybody. And some have documented earlier and in enough time that we could respond that they're not going to be able to make that date and that they think that they can make an alternative date. And we've generally agreed that kind of late submittal is unlikely to constitute a violation, that we would respond with an enforcement recommendation.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's what the growers understand.
Yeah.
And that's but they are in a chance. I mean, when the lab can't give you the information you need because they can't answer the questions because they feel that it's contradictory, that's the challenge we're in. So Good. Not for lack of trying.
Dr. Hunter.
We are always happy to have your input in conveying to us, you know, the kind of work that's going on. That's really important, and I think you've heard from this board, and I hope the folks today in the room have heard us say this is a work in progress. We do need to be updated, and you're one of the folks, Darlene Din also, who made her comments. another person who we know is out there working with different growers and bringing to us the range of issues, and that's exactly what we need. So this process, in my view, this process is going forward in the best way on all sides, including the work of staff, who also has to then sort out and provide good, reliable answers. And sometimes that takes longer than you know, we would like. But again, I think everyone, as long as we see good faith effort and good communication continuing, when communication breaks down is when we don't have a process underway.
Yeah.
So and that's where I would like to continue to encourage those of you that play that role to, you know, be proactively defining and detailing for us where are the bottlenecks and, you know, where are those hurdles that we need to look at and to the extent we can modify. But I think Lisa's comment, you know, that we're also trying to hold to a schedule because we all know with those deadlines comes action.
Right.
And that's what we all need.
Exactly. And, you know, and I've gotten up here and talked about this before. We're all trying to rebuild trust. And I think that, you know, I completely understand why you're asking for an individual to come to staff and talk about this. But that communication and that really back and forth and that understanding that they're operating in good faith is really key because they absolutely are. Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Wolf.
You know, speaking of trust, you know, with the experience that you have currently with the various growers, do you see better engagement of everybody in trying to work together?
Absolutely. I mean, I see that our members are very, very diligent about trying to meet the regulation. And absolutely. I think that in looking at ways to improve water quality, and they have been for a long time, I think that, you know, we as the Grower Shipper Association have really taken an effort, as you're about to see on this groundwater program, to really try to work very hard with staff and figure out solutions. And I hope staff sees that as well. And that, you know, comes from our members. Of course, they want us to, and we want to find solutions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next speaker, Steve Shemek, and last speaker will then be Norm Groot.
Good morning, everyone. Steve Shemek, the Otter Project and Monterey Coast Keeper. First of all, I want to begin by reinforcing Ben's comments, Mr. Pitoli's comments from Santa Barbara Channel Keeper about one of the aspects of the TAC was to offer some stakeholder input and some transparency on these cooperative on these larger programs, and if the TAC does not go ahead or if it's somehow delayed, we do hope that those programs will still be public somehow. And the idea that none have come forward, I think, is slightly wrong in that I think that there has been staff meeting with one group specifically at Moss Landing, you know, to discuss one of those cooperative programs. Next, I want to talk about the co-ops very quickly. I do have experience with co-ops. I've written one before. Also, because I'm basically sometimes lazy, I have experience with templates. The templates add efficiency, and they save just a ton of time. So what is being discussed today, I have experience with. Much of the information in the farm plans is directly transferable into the co-op. And farm plans have been required since 2004. So sure, some people starting from scratch may say it takes a very long time, but if you've been complying and paying attention since 2004, you've done a lot of the work already. With the farm plan information at hand, it's very unlikely that it would take 50 hours or even 20 hours to complete that co-op. I mean, it's just really, that's hard to believe. And I want to point out that it is my recollection, and I did not bring a copy of the stay order with me, but it is my recollection that the growers asked for this particular requirement to be stayed to creation of the co-op. And the state board denied that request for a stay because they felt that this was a reasonable requirement. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, last speaker is Mr. Groot. And that'll be it for speakers. You know, folks, Mr. Adams and you were here. I'll take your card, but you're the last speaker.
Right, but the reason is I try to shorten things by seeing what was said, and then if I don't have to comment, then
okay. All right.
Good morning, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Subsequent to my submission of a comment card on the SAP and the QAP, my remarks to you last month were mischaracterized by a previous speaker here. I want to make it very clear that when I spoke to you last month and made public comment, I was asked a question as to whether or not I was actively engaged in finding someone to participate on the TAC. And I responded very carefully that no, I was not, because on advice of our counsel, it is part of our appeal process before the state board that I was not actively participating in that. I was very careful in my words and what I said, and I did not say that I was actively working against finding anyone for the TAC, or that I was advising someone not to apply if they decided to choose to do so. And I think it's very unfair that we twist language that is adequately put forth in a report from this meeting, and it goes to further mismanage and not allow all the stakeholders to heal from this process. So I think it was very mischaracterized in what I said before, and I would like to make sure that you understand what it was that I said to you before and that I was not actively working against the formation of the TAC. Now, getting to what I want to comment on, which is the SAP and the QAP, I received it by email, as everyone else did, and I looked through it quickly, and I rapidly became very agitated and quite shocked, actually, that it was 53 pages. And looking through it, it's pretty technical. And for your information, I am also listed on your website as a technical advisor or expert for the Ag Order, and people do call me for that information. I'm not qualified to even fill this out, and it would take me several hours to do the research on this to really fill out the information that is required there. And sure, growers were working towards this deadline, but they had no idea it was going to be as complicated as what you put forth. I've had numerous conversations with small growers who feel this is beyond their technical capability of completing, and so they're now out looking for advisors or consultants to help them with this so that they can fill it out accurately. And if you assume $100 an hour and it takes them 20 hours to fill this out, that's a $2,000 expense. And we're rapidly approaching the amount that we originally quoted during the whole adoption process of what this was going to cost growers. So I just want you to be aware that your staff here has thrown a bit of a curveball at us by saying that this is a template, which is really designed to say this is the information we want. So growers are now having to step back, look at this, and decide how they're going to fill it out and complete it. And I think it's a bit unfair that this information wasn't given to the technical experts that are listed on your website in advance so that we knew what was coming and that we could prepare for it, nor was there any guidance to let us know how to do it. I would appreciate in the future that if something like this does be introduced, that we, as technical experts, have that understanding. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Dr. Hunter?
Mr. Groot?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, and thank you for clarifying your view on the TAC. I appreciate hearing from you. And so the question I have, though, regards the farm plan and the fact that much of the information in the farm plan is actually available and a reasonable way to respond to the QAP in characterizing farm operation. Is that, in your role as technical assistance, would you agree with that, or what do you think about the farm plan providing much of what is required for that QAP?
I think the farm plan goes a ways in identifying the information that's required, but I think the layout of the template went beyond that and really has some very technical jargon and some technical calculations in it that mm-hmm. they were not prepared for or mm-hmm. understanding that was going to be required. So it does require a bit more thought, and it does require a bit more research to make sure that they answer those questions properly and as they said, fill in the blanks the way they're supposed to be filled in.
Mm-hmm. So as a technical advisor, if you had a farm plan and you were to sit down and start to fill that out, it would be like, to me, it would seem like you would go through the farm plan, fill in the information that you could easily, and then determine. And it would seem to me in that process you could actually come to a reasonable amount of time that it might take to get those additional calculations done, as opposed to sitting down and filling it out from scratch without the benefit of the farm plan. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I believe that's true. But everyone I have talked to in these conversations it says it's going to take me 2 days at least, if not longer. So the average estimate that I heard was 20 hours worth of work. And that's where I quoted this number. If you get someone to help you with some of this, it's an expense. So I do not think that it should be minimized, that this is just something you sit down and fill out in a two-hour time frame.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much,
thank
Mr.
you.
Groot. And I do appreciate your clarification on the TAC issue, because that was a question I was going to ask of you. Now I understand.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Adam.
Thank you, Chairman Young, for this
sure.
opportunity, and I'll be very brief. I just wanted to talk about the trust building, as I did in the last time I presented with you, spoke with you. And I have a book by Eleanor Ostrom, Governing the Commons, that addresses a lot of these issues. And I don't know if you're aware of her. She won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009. She's since passed away, but anyway, did a lifetime of work. And anyway, that's I don't get any royalties for it either. So just wanted to mention that.
All right. Thank you.
I'm
you don't,
sorry,
you don't have copies of the book for us?
I'm online for $24.95.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair Young. Could
Dr. Hunter.
I need his full name. I didn't get it.
It's, I think it's George Adam.
George Adam. Thank you.
Okay. And he was on one of our field trips, the southern field trip that we had. So, okay, that concludes our speakers for this agenda item. And this was a status report for us, so there's no board action required. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just hiding down here. I just had a couple comments. I heard twice from people there that staff resources are not equating to program requirements and logistics, and I, as well as anybody else sitting up here, hear the reasons why, but that to me is a troubling start to this process of the ag waiver and enforcement and compliance, and especially building trust with, I guess, what would be on the groom side out there in the audience. But I know the issues are real from internally here, but I would hope that while we're recognizing those issues, that we're making every effort to make that an issue going up the food chain, that we did take place in moving with a progressive order and progressive changes, but to then be constantly having a, or maybe not constantly, but now and then to have a response to the participants that our resources aren't able to keep up with the issues is very frustrating. And I think it erodes our credibility moving forward if we can't resolve that. So I just a comment on what I heard a couple times, and I don't like hearing that comment, and I don't like the effect that comment will have, and so I'll just leave that with the executive officer. Thanks.
Okay.
Dr. Wolf.
Okay. Dr. Wolf. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
And then Mr. Johnson, not your nothing. Okay.
Yeah. To just supplement a little bit, Mr. Jordan, comment. You know, I'd like to get back to the GeoTrack for a second, because GeoTrack was presented as being sort of one of the pillars of being able to sort the data and basically manage the program through the input and. From presentations that staff made on the capability of GeoTrack, I think GeoTrack by itself has the capability of manipulating a lot of the data, but it seems we're struggling with the ability of either software, additional software development, and or someone able to do the data manipulation in-house. You mentioned July before we get some additional funding. Is there anything in between we can do to...
So there are changes in the works right now, which will take effect, which they'll be working on now. The funding for beginning July 1, the contract funding beginning July 1, has already been spoken for, and that's the first round of changes that we're going to have. Then in the fall, early winter of 2014, we will go out and ask the regional boards and state board will start asking for money for different projects, and that'll be our second bite at the apple. One of the things that we have talked about in-house, and it comes from a recognition at the state board, that the water boards are more and more reliant on their data systems for everything, that we need to start thinking about having in-house people who just work with the data systems. We don't have that, and I'm not aware of any regional board that has that. We have talked internally that when we have a number of people who are going to be retiring in the next year, and we have talked about how to best use that vacant position. One idea is to make that a dedicated database manager, and that person would not only work on GeoTracker, but CWIX and SMARTS, putting data in, answering data requests, that kind of thing. We haven't made a decision on it, but we are talking about that.
Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jordan alluded to some of my comments, and I don't want to be redundant, but and I don't want to say I told you so, but I think 2 years ago I mentioned this very issue, that what we were starting to prepare, what the staff was asking for, was going to be an overwhelming situation for the staff. And I questioned the executive officer at that time, Mr. Briggs, if he had the adequate staff, and he assured me he did. But it's obvious to me that, of course, with the cutbacks, and that's no fault to the staff at this particular time, but I was kind of looking out in the future what this would really do. Eventually, I think it'll resolve a lot of the issues as we get the bugs out of it, and I want to commend Mr. Harris and the staff for making every attempt, and Mr. Harris dedicating that the ag waiver is the number one issue within this region at this point in time. And I want to thank him for all the outreach that he's done for this board and the staff. The other thing I want to just talk about, and the amount of time, and I'm looking at a small farmer that's been driving a tractor all day long, and he gets this bundle of papers that are off the computer that he's got to fill out, he or she. And if you've ridden a tractor for 8 or 10 or 12 hours, which farmers do, you don't feel like sitting down and filling out 20 or 30 pages of paper. And it's very difficult. And farmers, a lot of people assume that you see a plot of ground that a crop has grown on, it's the same farmer that grows that same crop every year. That's not necessarily true. And so consequently, if you move your operation from one ranch to another, which you may lease or rent or whatever, then you have to go through this somewhat process every time to build that base back up again. So it is somewhat cumbersome. And I appreciated Abby's letter that she wrote, and I think she was right on target. And I appreciate the letter that Mr. Harris sent back to her with letting her know that we're going to kind of keep to the dates, but yet there's going to be some kind of slippage in enforcement issues. And I think that, you know, we're handing out the carrot, and I'm hoping everybody will work with us and try to make this a smoother transition. It's difficult, I know. But again, Mr. Chair and Mr. Harris, we need to give adequate time not only for the staff, but we also need to give adequate time for the applicants to make sure that what they're sending us is correct and have enough time to do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This concludes. Go ahead, staff.
I just was going to make a quick comment, Angela Schroeder. I appreciate what you've said, Mr. Jeffries. I think that we are in sort of a period of transition. We're definitely in developmental mode, and I appreciate all the efforts of the growers. We did, you know, going back to the development of the order, you know, one of the things I want to make sure and put in good context is we really tried to scale the requirements for the various farms. So the issues that we're talking about today in terms of the QAP are for a subset of the Tier 3. So we really did try going into the order development, you know, to say, okay, Tier 1 doesn't have to do this type of work. Tier 2 doesn't have to do this type of work. Let's really focus on where we think that work needs to be done so that we can contain that level of effort in a certain way. So we are in developmental mode. We definitely are trying to prioritize and seek additional resources. And I think it is going to smooth out. But we are definitely trying to focus those issues as well.
Lisa McCann, and I wanted to add that I appreciate everyone's sensitivity about resources, but I want us to be careful and thoughtful about lack of resources has to be measured against what the expectations for those resources are. And some of what you're hearing related to the QAPs, for example, and probably we'll all be engaging more about with the more advanced requirements as they kick in, is expectations on dischargers' part, growers' part, to have staff able to actually help them do their work to comply versus the work to explain the requirements and do compliance evaluations. So we're going to have some tension there. We're providing guidance, but we're not providing expert analysis or able to prepare anybody's individual plan. Nobody has asked us to do that, but I hope you understand what I'm saying there.
Dr. Hunter.
Angela, did I read in the staff report we're talking about a subset of 60 Tier 3 growers, and that's a number that's kind of...
The Tier 3 was, at the time of the staff report, was about 100, and so it's a subset of the 100, which equals about 60 overall. So that's out of the 4,200.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We're done with this agenda item. Okay. 19, we've concluded. And we will resume with agenda item 20, the last item on our agenda, at about 20 after 11.